Committee of the Whole will come to order. First bill for our consideration is House Bill 127. The clerk, reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 127, introduced by School Finance Committee, an act to dealing with school finance recalibration. This bill was referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman. Then it was appropriated, resent to the Appropriation Committee Number 2, which also recommended that it pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that House Bill 127 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee amendments. This is the big kahuna, and I'm going to walk us through the bill, but I'm going to try and give us about a 10,000-foot view of what the findings were and what the recommendations were and what the final bill contains. If you guys would like to get boiled down into the minutiae of every little tiny detail, we can answer your questions, but I'm going to kind of allow you to just bring that up as we go, because we took and spent probably, I would bet, 100 hours on this bill, and it's a pretty big piece of work, and it was a pretty big undertaking. A lot of that time was also focused on the accountability bill, but I will walk us through. The first thing that we did before we started recalibration was we went through an initial desk audit. And the desk audit was done by our consultants, and it was the process that they went through, and they looked at the different components of the model, and they looked at the way that the districts were spending those resources, and then they went back and identified where we were as far as the cost basis. And the cost basis is our constitutional obligation to make sure that we spend exactly what the services that we're providing cost, and that we allocate those resources in that way. The initial review of the current model basically found that the state and the district's basket of educational goods and the model that we were putting into those to fund those exceeded the court's recommendations. And that's probably the most important finding that you'll find as we move through this process. The consultants were able to identify that we are spending approximately $100 million more than what the constitutional cost basis is. So there's no question that the model is well funded. The resources significantly exceeded the cost basis. The assessment component, and then we did a bunch of technical recalibration, and we can get into that if you guys would like. It was stuff that is really not that controversial, like the assessment component of the model is not going to be adjusted by the external cost adjustment, because we know that assessment, the cost of assessment is relatively stagnant. We did some work on some small district adjustments and some other things in that, and I will work through that as we get into the findings. But the main thing that you need to know is that most of what we did with the recalibration was simply a refinement of technical modifications that we adopted. We did a bunch of conforming language for career vocational education in the bill. We also provided for the storage and management of electronic records by the Department of Education by pulling in all of the professional teacher standard board information into a single repository. Right now that was being done by the PTSB, and they were actually managing those records in paper form, alphabetized by first name, and it was an absolute nightmare. So we pulled all that information in. We are also eliminating one of the other things that the bill does is we eliminated the statutory depository of model spreadsheets with the Secretary of State. We discovered through the process that that's going to have to be pulled back in, so I've got a standing committee amendment. We actually went a little bit too far. The Secretary of State actually needs to be the one that has that, but we're also going to make that information available through the Department of Education. We forwarded a majority of the Department of Education's recommendations on early literacy. I know there were some serious questions about what we were doing with that in the Appropriations Committee, and at the appropriate time I will address those concerns. Can you get me a glass of water? And we added a formal process for periods following recalibration to ensure that legislatively forward, that when the funding model remains resourced at the cost-based level. And so we've identified that we're $100 million over the cost basis. And as we move forward, we will be identifying the actual costs in the districts. And as that rises, we'll determine whether or not we want to do an external cost adjustment. That's important because we've been talking about external cost adjustments and we've been applying them in a blanket form for years and years and years. And that's how we've gotten to where we are today. That's why we're $100 million over the cost basis, largely. What we need to do in the future and what this bill does is it allows for targeted ECAs so that we can break down professional, non-professional, and other sorts of categories specifically inside the model and apply those the external cost adjustments to specific components of the model. It makes a whole lot more sense than just putting a blanket ECA on year after year. We're not going to recommend, the Joint Education Committee is going to identify that every year. We're going to have the LSO that's actually going to go through a series of reports, and we're going to continue to identify where the model is in comparison with the cost basis. And as we approach that, we will forward recommendations onto JAC as to whether or not we believe that there is a need for an external cost adjustment. And those, as I said before, those external cost adjustments in the future will be applied to different components in the model instead of a blank component. If you think about it, and a good example of that is technology, for example. We know for a fact that technology is getting cheaper. It's not getting more expensive. It doesn't make sense for the state to continue to give a 3% raise in the component of technology when we know those things are not going up. So our hope is that as we move forward, we'll have more of a targeted approach. The instructional facilitators is another refinement that we did. In the past, that is a component that is currently outside of the block grant or outside of the model. In the past, we've identified what we thought was the approximate amount of money that it would take to pay for 60% of those. And as we move forward, we're actually going to be paying 100% of the 60%, which will actually cost us a little bit more, but it's a more precise way of doing it. And we also incorporate model components as into the session law, which is the attachment A, as we're all aware of. I've hit all the high points. I'll walk through the standing committee amendment, and then I'll answer questions on the standing committee amendments. And if there aren't any, we'll call for the question. But we did an amendment on the reading assessment. It was currently, or we had a lot of discussion about this in committee. We changed the goal of the reading assessment portion to 100% during the interim. The committee felt that 100% was not really an attainable goal, and so we lowered it back down to 85%. The real issue with that is the people that don't reach the goal have to file a plan with the state, a reading plan. And I think at 85%, they're all going to probably have to file a plan anyway. But it does set it as a more attainable goal. The other option that we could do, and we'll get some input from Appropriations Committee about their concerns with this, we could just say that everybody has to do a reading plan. I think the result would be the same. But we'll go ahead and take questions on the reading assessment.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have a question on not necessarily the 85%. We did see this in appropriations, and there was some discussion. But I would like you to touch on, if you could, going from proficient on line 18 to at grade level. Because I believe that there is a difference between being proficient and being at grade level. Are we softening the blow? Or are we making it more difficult? I know there are some of us that would like to have seen us gone from 85, which is where we're at now, maybe up to 90. Just because I think, you know, giving the districts, I understand 100% is unattainable, but we're talking about children reading at third grade level, which is an extremely important age. It will tell you how they're going to do through the rest of their time in public school. So if you could just touch on proficient versus that grade level.
Thank you for the question. The primary difference between proficient and grade level is the difference in which test you're going to use to measure it by. PAWS measures proficiency, and that's a standard that we've set. Arguably, the proficiency and the DIBLs and the MAP testing that we use for reading assessment is more based at grade level. I would say if I had to choose between the two, the proficiency standard in PAWS is probably higher. Are there any further questions on the reading assessment? Okay. Also during the standing committee, we also clarified that the reading improvement plan must report and contain at a minimum the student-teacher ratios and the use of tutors and instructional facilitators in those reading programs, which I think was a very good amendment. We just need to make sure that districts are using the strategies that we have put in place if they're not hitting the mark, and that was an attempt to clarify that. We did reinstate the Secretary of State language, as I said before, for technical reasons. They still will have a copy of the funding model as filed, as required, as in all legislation, and so we return that. That's merely a technical correction. We also did another amendment, which would allow new schools to have their approved gross square footage used as a factor in calculating the routine maintenance and operation functions. Currently, new schools have to wait 2 years to have their gross square footage put into the model because the timing of when the School Facilities Commission actually calculates the allowable gross square footage. It really isn't fair to those districts that are designing and building new schools to have to wait 2 years to start receiving those funds. That really was an issue of fairness, in my opinion. We also did the same for utilities. We're actually going to recommend that the base utility funding off of the 09-010 expenditures, the recommendation of the bill was 0405, I believe. And so we're going to update that, which will make the information more current and more consistent. We also authored a small district adjustment. And really, the small district adjustment was a simple little adjustment that we added to help those small schools in those small districts where they actually have fewer students per grade level than what the model would generate for one teacher. And so instead of resourcing these schools as if they're going to have a half a teacher per classroom or three-quarters of a teacher per classroom, it was our recommendation that we go ahead and give them at least the funding for one full teacher per classroom. We originally designed that based on the small school adjustment of 49, 49, and 49 because 49 is the cutoff for the small school adjustment. After further review, we decided it would make a little bit more sense to base it on off of classroom size so that you would get K-5, 16 students, that's what the model generates, and then K, 6-12, give them at least 21 students. So we added an amendment that would change the size of the small school, the small district adjustment from 147 to 243. It brought in two more districts. It's going to cost around $100,000. It was really not a big issue, but from a logical standpoint, it makes more sense to resource it that way. And then we had to add two at-will positions. There are currently two at-will positions that were put in place by this body for recalibration. So we're actually going to continue those two positions. And the reason why we need them is that we're bringing this work in-house rather than to use consultants. And we'll be managing PTSB reporting now that we've brought that into the department. We need those people to do that. As we move forward with the accountability phase of the legislation that's working its way through the Senate, will need those positions to help us as we benchmark also for determining where we're going to be with our funding. These positions are, as I said before, a continuation of two at-will positions that we're terminating this year. And I can see everybody is really excited about this. I've covered all of the high points. I believe that at this point in time, I would like to call for the question on the standing committee amendment.
Question having been called, all in those in favor of standing amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has been adopted.
I would answer any general questions, Mr. Chairman, right now that people might have about the changes that we've made. The main thing that you need to understand is that we are carrying forward the model that we've had before. This was not a reinvention of the model as we see it. We feel relatively confident that it is well-funded, that it's constitutionally sound, and we should be proud of what we've done here. That being said, we did spend most of our time during the interim focused on the accountability bill. That's the second piece to this. Without that bill, this bill would not have had the smooth sailing that it did, because our focus is really going to shift now from this point forward from funding to developing an accountability system that will really improve the quality of education we have in Wyoming. So I would stand for any questions.
Chairman Teeters, we have three more amendments. Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I would move forward at this time and move Committee of the Whole Amendment 1 and ask for its favorable consideration. And this is a little bit of a substantive change to how we've been handling an important element under the funding model, and that's transportation. And it's a little difficult to tell that from the amendment that's before you, but what follows that Section B is a description of the transportation costs. And as most of you are aware, the way it works now is that there's a 100% reimbursement for those transportation costs under the model. And so districts simply submit what they're spending on transportation, and then the state reimburses them directly dollar for dollar for all those expenditures. In looking at this important issue of accountability, you also need to, I think, look at the dollars that are spent on our education system, and this is an area where accountability falls short. And I'll tell you just a little anecdotal story from my own district that I think shows how the incentives get a little messed up with the system that we have now. We had an issue within our district dealing with the musical education of elementary age students and the traveling of teachers and the time wasted them traveling school to school. So there was a committee put together, and at that meeting, one of the elements or options put forward was taking all the kids from all over the district and busing them to a central location to do their music education a few times a week. And somebody raised their hand and raised the issue of, well, isn't that going to increase our costs substantially? Aren't we going to have significantly more transportation costs? And the response they got was, you don't need to worry about that. The state takes care of that. So we're not going to factor that into our system of ranking these options. And that's the sort of incentive you get with a one-for-one reimbursement with no real limit on it, no real incentive to create efficiencies in your transportation system, no real, real-world element in how we fund transportation. And so what this amendment attempts to do is really take a baby step. What it would do is, good chairman said, we're currently overfunding education by $100 million. And so the districts have that $100 million currently that they're able to use for all sorts of uses. What we're going to say through this amendment is that you're going to, out of that that spare money, you are going to have to pay 10% of the cost of transportation. So you'll submit your reimbursement. The state will pay you 90% of that, but you, the district, are going to have to pay 10%, which is, I think, frankly, probably too small a percentage, but I understand the value of incrementalism. And so it at least builds in a small incentive for the districts to think twice when they make decisions related to transportation. It gives some incentive to districts to build some efficiencies into transportation system, and I think it builds in at least a little bit of accountability. And just to give you an idea of what the impact would be on the districts, we have total costs, the 09-10 school year for these transportation costs of $61 million, a little over $61 million. And so out of that $100 million in overfunding, out of the $1.3 billion that we spend on education, districts would have to pony up a little over $6 million for their portion of the education costs. And that's a small step, but I think it's an important step to say, hey, we need to look at all our costs and make sure that the dollars we're spending on education are being done efficiently and that taxpayers are getting value for their dollars spent. So with that, I'd take any questions you may have on the proposed amendment.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just rise in support of the amendment. You know, I think unless you can get rid of a perverse incentive, people are not going to change their behavior. And when you say, I'm going to pay for whatever you spend, they're going to spend a whole lot more than if they have a little bit of skin in the game. I appreciate the bringer of the amendment, and I urge the body to adopt it.
Madam Chair Korberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I must not be reading this amendment correctly. So I'm... Because I guess the way I'm reading is that they're going to get the assigned percentage of the base price amount for bus price, bus purchase and lease payment, plus they're going to get 100% of what they actually expended during the previous year, and they're going to get 90% of the amount actually expended by the district. I'm just not reading it right, Mr. Chairman, I guess. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Mr. Chairman, the 100% is for the actual reimbursement of the purchases of the buses. The 90% will be applied to the maintenance and the miles they're putting on, basically.
Representative Stubson. Okay. Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has been adopted. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 127 and ask for your favorable consideration. I wish I could just play the audio recordings of the debate we had on this last year, or the year before that, or the year before that. This is the Summer Enrichment Learning Grants Program. It's a $450,000 appropriation for enriched learning opportunities for students. It's a competitive grant program. The school districts have to compete to have grants, and then the grants are awarded based upon some specific criteria. And if you look on page 1 of the amendment, it talks about evidence that the proposed enrichment learning strategies are research-based, documentation and national resources, a plan for participation. And then there's an evaluation process, and they have to report the results. This program has been wildly successful throughout the state of Wyoming. Last year, and these grants are very competitive, last year in the county that houses the university of this state, they had a summer odyssey program with integrated science, art enrichment, kindergarten through four at the lab school. In the mother county, they had hands-on activities in forestry, art, rocketry, job shadowing, field trips to historical sites, and our state university. In the county directly to the south of mine with the river running through it, they had a tune-into reading program for struggling readers. In the county that houses the reservations, they had a whole series of programs in both in District 1 and District 24. In the county where all the hot water bubbles out of the ground that's not a national park, they had an enrichment programming for all students to achieve proficiency on rigorous academic stands through highly engaging learning experiences. In the county directly to the west of mine that's not bordering Montana, they had a grant for programs in conservation, ecology, flora, fauna, measuring water quantity, extensive journals, public speaking, home building, and maintaining fitness. In the smallest county in the state, they had reading, fluency, comprehensive, and love of reading. The county where Buffalo Bill started his town, they had marvelous programs. And then also in the county to the north of here, the county to the north of the county that's west of mine that borders Montana, the county with the big mountains in it, they had a wonderful program, and the county to the furthest southwest corner of the state. Now, what's interesting is in that is that my county's not listed. And the reason my county's not listed is because they didn't do a good enough job in putting together a competitive grant for the programs. And so what this does is it creates a laboratory for learning programs competitive amongst the districts. It's designed so that there's not enough money to go around, that you have to have the highest performing districts do it. And we've had marvelous results, and it's a very popular program throughout the community. I know it's a $450,000 appropriation from what's already overfunded as a model, but this is an incentive to innovate. I say that only because we've had this debate before, and I know what I'm about to hear. And with that, I'd stand for any questions.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'll try not to repeat any of the things I've said in the last 4 years. Maybe I'll come up with something new and innovative this time, to steal a word from the good majority floor leader. And I understand his love for this program, but any way you want to look at it, folks, this is $450,000 out of a $1.3 billion budget. If your district manager, your business manager in your district can't find enough money to run a little program like this, he's either lying to you or you need to fire him, because I guarantee you the money's there. We don't need any more add-ons to this model. It is highly, 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 highly generous. It's with the cost of living adjustments, it's the wealthiest model in the whole country. There's money in the model to provide for these sorts of programs. I would urge the body to please do not hang any more Christmas ornaments on this tree. It's heavy enough as it is, and we're going to knock it over if we keep piling them on. So I would urge you to vote no, and this will be my position on any future add-ons. This thing is loaded up. And if we want to take a hard look at loading stuff up, I can go home tonight and come back with enough amendments to strip millions and millions of dollars, and you won't be able to argue against it, because I've got data, we've got information, we've got good logic to show you where we can cut money that is overfunded. So I don't think we want to go down that road. I don't want to have that fight on second and third reading. And I think the best thing we could do right now is defeat this amendment. Thank you.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you. Just on the off chance that we might not defeat this amendment, I'd like the sponsor to tell me why he thinks we need to make this become enacted immediately upon signing by the governor.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My original question was to ask the Chairman of Education how we can be looking at cutting back and trying to streamline and be more efficient, and yet he's adding $450,000. So I was really glad to have him stand up and say what he just said. And I would urge you to go along with our Chairman of Education. I've seen these things just get added on and added on, off-model funding, and I've got a whole history of those things, and we just didn't need all of them to start with. And so I think the chairman is headed in the right direction. I'd urge you to defeat this amendment.
Representative Blickrey.
Mr. Chairman, fellow representatives, I see this as a $450,000 investment to make the rest of our model better. Just earlier, we voted to add 5 days to the year. And the reason we did is because we know that the more time kids are in school, the better that they do. This is time that kids are having a great time, but they're also shortening up the period in which they're not in school. And when they do that, they shorten up the period in which they get back to where they were when they left in the spring. So on in favor of the amendment.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At the risk of sounding like a bragging mother, I could distribute for all of you a picture of my son in our local school district paper that goes around town. And thanks to the nice ladies at the church I attend, I have about 50, I probably have 60 copies of it because everybody gave me a copy of it. But in any event, both of my sons have participated in the programs here over the summer, and they're wonderful. This summer, the picture that was in the paper was of my son taking a sample out of a tree to learn about beetle kill. They had participation from our professors from our university. And what's really good about this, in addition to everything you've heard, is that now the concept for this that they've used in these summer programs, they've developed it over a few years now, and they're now developing a project-based school within a school to create that kind of innovation that we really, really want in our schools, so we can reach all the kids with different styles of learning, the more hands-on learners like my sons. And so I think this has been a good investment in education, and not expensive and well worth the modest dollars. And again, it's competitive because last summer, two summers ago, our local school district did not get the money.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Well, my Christmas trees are always over-decorated, and the cat tends to knock it down. So at the risk of over-decorating this Christmas tree also, I would ask you to look very favorably upon this amendment. One of the things we heard in the recalibration committee, testimony from districts throughout the state, one of the people who testified was the superintendent from the district whose high school has the highest graduation rate in the state, 91%. And she said, and let me tell you how we get that high graduation rate. We find programs that are exciting. We find programs that are stimulating. We find programs that make kids want to be here, want to compete, and want to stay in school. While I understand the need to be fiscally prudent, I also would remind you that we are here for the education of our students. And this competitive program, because it is competitive, it's not just a handout to each district, deserves serious consideration, and I would urge you to seriously consider adopting it. Thank you.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to, ladies and gentlemen, remind you of the fact that, you know, this recalibration bill is really the fundamental piece of the block grant program that is based on a basket of education goods that we've identified and the courts have identified as being basic and necessary to everybody, every public school student's education. These basic components in the model that we brought in today are funded. They've been identified in a variety of ways, and they're funded. And they're not only funded, but they're funded by in excess of $100 million. You know, if this is an add-on that is not appropriately considered within a block grant or our block grant because it's not the basic fundamental components that that we've included. If you look at all the rest of the things back in the appendix of what's in there. Now, if the bringer of this amendment would bring this as a bill, and he's got time to bring it as a separate standalone bill, we can deal with it like we deal with it every year. If we've got plenty of money and we can see our way to doing that for a summer program, we can do it. But it shouldn't be put into a five-year or six-year recalibration effort that's based on a block grant of basic basket of goods. Thank you.
Representative Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On and in favor of this amendment, there are very few measurable things that have an effect on a student's education, and one of those things that is measurable is less gap in the education. So these summer programs are very valuable. In our community, we use them for students to explore careers in math, science, technology, and engineering, areas that we know our state and country are lacking in. So I think this is a vital component for us.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had the great opportunity. I'm no longer on the task force or the group that worked on this, but I worked with a group that was mostly educators, but a couple of legislators and others who worked on the design for summer enrichment programs and after-school enrichment programs. And it was our understanding, and the directions that we were given was that school foundation dollars, model dollars, could not be used anywhere outside of the traditional school day. So if it was a summer program or if it was an extended day program, that had to be paid outside of those school foundation dollars. If that is the case, then I am strongly in favor of this amendment. Mr. Chairman, however, believes that there's no limitation and that school districts can pay for extended day and summer programs out of their block grants. If that's the case, I think that the testimony that we've heard is that there's plenty of money there and they can do that. But I would really like to have that clarified before we get to a final vote. The other thing that would tend to, once we get that clarified and we know for sure that we can spend district dollars in that way, then the reason to do it immediately is because we need it to begin paying for the programs that would happen this summer that aren't funded currently. And the thing that I learned on that group is that this is one of the opportunities that we have where we have great data, very discrete data from individual students that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that these innovative programs are extremely successful at helping those students who might otherwise be really losing a lot of ground over the summer. So I really think it's an excellent way to spend our dollars. My only question is, can the districts do it out of their model money, or if not, we need to supply this money? Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I have conferred with staff. There is no question, there is no prohibition on a district from spending their block grant dollars any way they want. So the issue of there not being enough money because it has to be a separate pot is just purely not correct. And with all due respect to my good friend from Campbell County, if anybody can look at me with a square face and honestly tell me there's not enough money to do this, I don't think anybody would believe that there isn't. It's an issue of priority. If these districts believe in these sorts of programs, the money is there. They just need to budget it in there and run these programs. We spend over $2.5 million a year on gifted and talented, and really that's what this sort of program should probably come out of that line item. So there's plenty of money there.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just for the body, because I think this is also a policy issue, and if you're feeling torn right now and you're not quite for sure because it sounds great and the data is good, and it is a great, I mean, these summer school programs are wonderful, and the good speaker from Laramie County talked about it. The teachers involved in the one that her son went to actually wanted to try to start a charter school, but that's a whole other subject. There's no disagreement on it that the fact these are really wonderful programs. But if you're feeling torn right now, I will tell you that if you vote for yes for this, you're going to be consistently confronted with feeling torn because everybody's going to want to pile on the next greatest thing. So if you're feeling torn, vote no, because it is a policy decision. And if we keep piling on, there's always going to be something that is really, really wonderful.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if everybody wants to look at page 29 of the bill. Gifted program, there's $29.19 for every ADM in the program. The next one down on line 13, student activities, the resource, it shows you how much for each ADM, for each, whether it's an elementary school, a middle school, a high school, an alternative school. And this is money that's in the model. It's, again, it's a policy choice of those local districts that how they want to use this model. So I agree with the chair, with the good chairman of education.
Is Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try and answer all of the questions that were asked. The reason it's effective upon signing by the governor, as the good representative north of me said, is so we can use it this year. This was in the block grant when we recalibrated a few years ago. We took it out, and we've been doing amendments to put it back in every year. It goes in the model. It gets stripped out. We do a budget amendment to continue doing it year after year after year. We did a budget amendment to put it in, and that's why we have the data from last year. And we've added it each of the last 4 years since it was stripped out of the model 4 years ago. This is a vastly popular program. It's popular amongst districts. It's successful. It works. It's data-based. It shows student improvement. Schools are competing for the grant. They're working to get the money. They're modifying their programs. They're innovating. They're trying to get better. I can show you pictures of a line in front of the local school where people were lined up through the gym, out the front of the school, around the block, and down the street because it's so popular amongst parents. It's a program that works. It works very, very well. It seems silly to me that when we talk about education accountability, education assessment, we have a database program that shows the data on the improvement that's popular amongst schools, parents, and students. Why would we want to get rid of that?
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you. I just want to clarify one thing, and I think the good majority floor leader might be a little confused. This program was never in the model. We've done it for several years. We had the summer school and an extended day, and maybe that's what he's getting confused about. But we did not have this program in the model.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I'd respectfully disagree with the good chairman. It was in the model, and then it was stripped out. It's been out of the model for about 4 years.
Representative Patton.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question relative to the amendment. The assistance shall be on page 2, line 38. It talks about assistance shall be available to recipient districts during the school session for which the application is made. And I'm curious, how many districts did that include in the past when it was in the model or years gone by?
Is there any other discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of
If I could get the good representative from Sheridan to maybe rephrase the question for me one more time, Representative, I'll take a crack at your question. I apologize.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The data I have was that 13 districts utilized it last year. I don't know how many applied last year. I will find that data out.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The chair is in doubt. Those who are voting aye, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 fails. Representative Barbuto.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor.
Representative.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen of the 61st, today in our gallery, we're privileged to have joining us the students from the University of Wyoming Accelerated BSN program. So if those folks, if you students could stand up and be recognized. Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Just on a personal, I've never in my career, my short career as a legislator, had a friend from college visit me or come and see me here. And today I'd like to introduce from Powell, Wyoming, Nancy Hart. And if you're attending the nursing reception tonight, under no circumstances are you to talk to her or ask her questions about me.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Privilege of the floor.
Privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you to 27 nursing students and 7 faculty from the best nursing program in the state, Casper College.
Representative Freeman.
Mr. Chairman, may I have the privilege of the floor?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, up in the gallery, we have the nursing students from, and I get to say this now because she's already gone, the best nursing program in the state from Western Wyoming Community College. We would like to thank them for being here.
Representative Laux.
Speaking of the best nursing college in the state, I'll reiterate Casper College's program. And my wife, Heidi, happens to be one of the instructors of the program. Lucky to all meet her. She's the one with 27 students down here in the best program. Thank you.
With that, I'll take personal. Representative Chairwoman Berger.
I know that I'm vertically challenged here, Don. Ladies and gentlemen, I thought the best nursing school was in Sheridan County. Sheridan College, come on! Where are all of you? Yay! Hey, welcome. I just know I feel very healthy and safe right now. Thank you. Now, Mr. Chairman.
Kasparik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to introduce the best of the best. My former colleagues and many of my former students, nurses from Campbell County Memorial Hospital and Gillette College of Northern Wyoming Community College District, and always my friends.
Madam Chair Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And of course, we saved the best and the brightest and the most beautiful for last. Northwest College nursing students, please welcome them.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the best for the last. Actually, a former student of Northwest Wyoming Nursing Program, one of the very early graduates, LPN, my wife. She's not here. She's not here, but she's the best for the last.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now the very best for the last. We just passed a huge bond issue to expand the nursing program at Central Wyoming Community College at CWC in Riverton. And I'd like those students to please stand and be recognized.
Representative Escobel.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor. I'm sure you've got to have some LCCC nursing students up there somewhere, don't we? Where are they? They're taking care of patients? They're in class where they should be, huh? Okay.
Anyone else? With that, I'll take personal privilege of the floor. Introduce my youngest son, Andrew, who's in the gallery to the west. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any best of anything to introduce, so instead I will move House Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3 to House Bill Number 127 and ask for your favorable consideration. When we were in the Recalibration Committee, as the good Chair of Education explained, we had a couple of consultants who had prepared the model previously and who worked with us on this model. And one of the things that they actually suggested in their report was the importance of school resource officers, policemen from what or police women from towns and counties and cities, who also work within our schools to provide safety for our schools. So while they talked about the importance of school safety, and while they talked about the important role that school resource officers play in the safety of our students and our schools, they didn't put anything in the model for what was really one of their recommendations. So this amendment seeks to remedy this by a very narrowly defined program. This is would begin in July and then end in 1 year. And it's a granting program to allow districts to provide school resource officers. We know that they do. We know that some of them partner with local police departments, but we also know that they expend a great deal, especially some of the larger districts, of their model funds. One district reported $400,000 that they spend for school resource officers. Another one reported $100,000. And I know we've talked a lot about transparency. We've talked a lot about we want to know where the monies go that are in the model, and it is a very well-funded model. But I would ask you to consider this granting program to assist districts in the employment of additional school resource officers and urge your favorable vote on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. In my community, we do two of these. We have one at the high school, and the high school's in the county, so the sheriff provides the school resource officer. It's a deputy sheriff. And then we at the middle school, which is in the town police provides an officer, which serves as a school resource officer. They provide them, and then the school district reimburses the sheriff for the cost of that individual, and then the town reimburses the school district for the cost, or school district reimburses the town for the cost. So it does add up to some money. What my question had to do with was not actually the money part, was more on page 1, line 34, it says require employment by the applicant district. I know that most of these that are get done around the state, the school resource officer actually is a law enforcement officer who is actually employed by that law enforcement agency, not by the school district. So that was my first question. Was that just an oversight? Is that something that could just be fixed? Or were you wanting the person to actually be employed by the district? If that's the case, then you're talking more of a security officer rather than a school resource officer, in my opinion, because I think a school resource officer needs to be a law enforcement officer. And then on page two, my other question was, Oh, it says you have to follow the criteria of the National Association of Resource Officers. You know, if you I know my sheriff does not follow that because there's a bunch of other requirements in that. I was just wondering if you were willing to take that out. And then I was just curious how you came up with the 50,000. It's 50,000 per district. Was that the number recommended in the consulting report? And then, and lastly, and maybe the chairman of education can address this, if this was something that was recommended by the consultants, what was the discussion in committee and why wasn't it put in? And maybe it just goes back to that earlier discussion you had on overfunding by $100 million.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And let me just try to address a couple of the questions that were raised by the good speaker pro tem. He's absolutely correct when talking about the need for and the use of the school resource officers in many of our larger districts in the state and even some of the smaller ones, and that each one of them right now is funding those resource officers somewhat differently. For example, in my district, I know that they're spending $100,000, of which a slight portion of it is reimbursed through a federal program, but nowhere near the $100,000 that's being skimmed off of the top of the block grant money that goes to my particular community. We heard from one district superintendent where they're spending $400,000 straight from their block grant for school resource officers. So, folks, what that means is that before paying for teachers' salaries, before paying for programs, before paying for anything else, instructional facilitators, tutors, utilities, they are paying in some configuration for police officers to be in their schools. And while many of us are somewhat chagrined that we need police officers in our schools, we do, and we know that they do well. And in fact, they help with the educational environment. We heard that over and over and over again. So what this bill does is allow for a mechanism for 1 year, and 1 year only, to put aside $500,000 and allow 10 districts to be reimbursed at $50,000 each. So that first that we can actually help those districts that have been utilizing those school resource officers, but also so that we can get some better data about how they're being used in order that we can evaluate whether and how we should be funding them more continually. And so that's the reason why it's in there for 1 year as one of these types of programs that I honestly wish that we saw more of, that we want to see what works well. And then if something works well, we want to replicate it. And if it doesn't work well, we want to get rid of it. So, again, it's for 1 year, 1 year only. Districts have to apply for it, and they have to apply for it based on their previous experience. And then finally, to the questions in terms of kind of changes and modifications in terms of the program that was established, sure, we can work on those for third reading amendments. So, again, on and in favor of the amendment, and I ask for your favorable consideration.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I understand the issue with this and have studied it with some diligence, and I truly believe that if there was a hole in the model that required us to fill based on the people that are hiring these resource officers, I would be the first one to stand before you and say that I think we ought to fund it. But I can tell you right now that the hole is just not there. If you ask districts, do you feel as though you're adequately funded, they're going to say that they do. I haven't heard anybody say that they're not. They're paying for them right now, and they're finding innovative ways to pay for it, like federal grants. They are using some of their block grant money. We did study this in 2005, and in 2006 we failed to make any recommendations because the belief then was that there was enough money in the system to do it. We've seen external cost adjustments since that point in time. The model is actually richer than it was when we failed to make any recommendations in 2006. And it's something that we definitely need to keep an eye on as we move forward, but at this point in time we don't need any more resources. So I would urge you to vote no.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Speaking on and for the amendment, I have the opportunity to work with two school resources officers in my county, the county that has two number ones on its license plate. And I'll tell you, these folks are integral to the educational success of students in that county. They are very busy. Not only do they provide central security for the building and for students, but they're often the go-to people for the administration, for principals, for teachers to follow up with problem children that can be addressed right away. So I don't believe this is an amendment like the House has seen before, in that it is a one-time, it's a one-year program. If you are already receiving federal funds, you're not eligible for these funds. There's a $50,000 maximum on the per district that can have these. So I hear what the chairman says, what Chairman Teeter, or the chairman from north of here says, in regard to the system being well funded. There's no question that it is, and I'm not disputing that. But I am saying that this is a worthwhile. School resource officers are worthwhile. They're valuable to these districts, and I would urge the body to vote yes on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, just to answer the good Speaker Pro Tem's question, I would be delighted to amend the require employment by the applicant district, because I think he's absolutely correct. Most of the districts, these people are actually employed by a local police department, which creates a whole lot better better presence in the school than if they're employed by the school district. So that's an amendment. Should this go forward, I do believe we should make. The idea of subscribing to the principles of a particular organization, I think, can also be amended, just as long as there are those principles established. As was mentioned before, if you are currently receiving federal funding for this, you are not eligible for this granting program. And it's an issue we really do have to look at, because the districts that I talk to, the districts that are in my area, say if there's something we need, it's this. When we adjourn for today, I'm going to participate in a program on school bullying, which is becoming a huge issue in many of our schools, and especially our larger schools. And the indication just pretty much across the board is, if we want to keep our students safe and we want to keep them protected from not only bullying but all kinds of other issues that come up in schools, the school resource officer is the way to go. I would also suggest that while districts have resource officers and they are finding ways to fund them, they're not they don't have enough. My district, which is one of the very largest, has two. And they told me what they really need. Their wish list would be eight, but they'd love to have four. So I believe while they're finding money to maybe barely scrape the surface, my particular district has one at the junior high level and one at the high school level. That's not enough. We're only asking for 1 year. We're asking for very tightly controlled circumstances so that we can get that additional data and we can come back with additional recommendations. But given the importance of school safety and the position of prominence it's occupying in many of our minds and much of our media, I would strongly urge your adoption of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3 for this one-year program. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I just would like to remind the body that there is no such thing as a one-year program. You know, we've heard that before. You do it once, it goes on into perpetuity until the sun finally supernovas. I mean, it just is not going to end. And as soon as there is legitimate need in the districts, we can move forward with a plan to deal with it. But if you look at the model and you look at the personnel resources that are allocated in the model right now, districts are hiring 500 fewer teachers than what the model allocates. So what are they doing with that money? If there are 500 fewer teachers than what we're paying for, there's more than enough to hire a few police officers. And I urge your no vote.
Mr. Speaker, Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was asking those questions earlier because I do work with school resource officers and find them very helpful in the schools. I have to go with the chairman of education. I mean, if he's telling us there's plenty of money in the model, I'm going to trust my chairman that that's correct. I'd urge you to vote no. I don't think a no vote is a vote against school safety. What we're being told is there's plenty of money in the model to pay for these positions. They're paying for them right now. There's no need for this amendment. I'd urge you to vote no and stick with the chairman.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, not just yet. There are 500 fewer teachers in the model because districts are spending the money on other items that we as a body have said are important, and those include lower student-teacher ratios. There's 500 fewer teachers because districts are doing things like paying for police officers. I want a model that accurately reflects what's going on in our districts and in our schools. To me, that's our obligation with this recalibration process. It is to accurately reflect what we need and what we want. And then when we talk about accountability, to see how districts in the state is doing in relationship to what we as a body have said through months and months of work and research is the best for our kids. If we sit here and say, well, we have a model, we expect you to follow it, but we all know that most of our districts are hiring police officers out of that model that we haven't given them the money for, then I think we're being hypocritical. We know that our districts are hiring police officers out of their block grant. I think it's time that we recognize it. Therefore, on and for this amendment.
Madam Chair Berger. Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think much more needs to be said, but there is money in the model. And I just urge you to resist this. As a former speaker used to say, let's stay the course. Thank you.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed.
Mr. Chairman, may I have privilege of the floor?
Madam Chair Berger.
Thank you. We just celebrated one favorite group of folks that were in the gallery. We now have another favorite group in the gallery, some of our friendly librarians. And to my right, we have Leslie Boynton, the state librarian, and we have Maggie Farrell, the University of Wyoming librarian. And with them, we have Cynthia Etkin, senior program planning specialist from the U.S. Government Printing Office. And she's meeting with all Wyoming librarians to discuss the Federal Depository Library Program in Wyoming. As you know, we have 9 of these depositories in Wyoming, which allows for free public access to federal information. So I'd like to welcome our special guests and our favorite librarians. And if there are other librarians in here, hello, all of them. As you might know, Mr. Chairman, there was a little compass put on your desk to help you find your way this evening to a reception. So I hope it works. Chairman Childers was having difficulties operating his. But anyway, welcome and thank you for being here. And I'm sorry for the...
We are back on the bill. Question having been called, all those in favor of Chairman Teeter's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 127 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. House Bill 127 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That was great debate. We've done 3 whole bills on general file today. General file list right now for tomorrow is 27 bills. I intend to go, with your permission, until about 4:30 or as close thereafter this afternoon, just so that you know what my intentions are. Please continue to debate fully and fairly, but that sound you hear way off in the distance is bills dying as they fall off the cliff at the end of next week. So keep that in mind with your debate.
Chairman Semelik. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 16. The reader will please read the bill.
House Bill 16, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to the Wyoming Beef Council. This bill was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources, which recommended that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Blake, Davison, Eklund, Laux, Wanitzer, Dan. No, Camel, Hunt, Onis, Semelik. Signed, Representative Semelik, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Semelik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that House Bill Number 16 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll turn the explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment and the bill over to our good representative from House District 43.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pleased to present House Bill 16. It is an interim committee bill that's brought forward by the Wyoming Beef Council and that group in our state that has represented stock growers in our state since 1872, who have also provided you a handout on your desk on this bill. The beef checkoff program in Wyoming has been around since 1971. Currently, Wyoming producers pay $1 per head on all cattle and calves anytime you have a change of ownership. 50 cents of that stays here in Wyoming. The other 50 cents goes to the National Cattlemen, a national group that does beef promotion. You'll be familiar with the beef, it's what's for dinner commercials you see on TV and the radio. This is one of the many commodity checkoff programs that we have in our state and that exist in states around the country. The current program has been around since 1971. I'd like to read you, it's one of the few statutes we have a legislative intent clause with. And so the legislative intent of this statute is by this act is to provide for the cattle industry the authority to establish a self-financed program to help market, develop, maintain, and expand in the state, national, and foreign markets for beef and beef products that are produced, processed, manufactured in Wyoming, and the use and consumption of such beef and beef products. Now, this process has been working arguably well for the last 40 years. Yes, there are a couple of cattle producers in our state who don't always like paying a dollar. But by and large, most people believe this has been important to promoting the beef industry in Wyoming. What this bill does, House Bill 16, is ask for state authority to assess a state-level beef checkoff where the amount would stay in Wyoming. It allows the Beef Council to decide to institute this fee to up to $1 a head at their discretion. It doesn't mandate them to ever take this step. I know some of the emails say that it does that we've been receiving, but there's no mandate for them to ever take this action. It will be at their discretion and use should they ever want to use it. I believe the Standing Committee Amendment and the two Committee of the Whole amendments are agreeable to most all of us, and so I'd like to tackle those first before we start debating on the bill. So if I could talk about Standing Committee Amendment number one at this time, Mr. Chairman. What this does on page 2, line 1, is takes it down from $1.50 to a dollar on what the national checkoff could be charged. This was an amendment brought to us in the interim to put by a more independent group of cattle owners in Wyoming that tried to ensure that we would never charge more than $1.50 for a national checkoff. Currently, federal law states it's only going to be a dollar. So in committee, the Standing Committee Amendment just said we're going to be in line with the feds, and it'll be a maximum of a dollar, just in line with federal law. So I'd be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment if there are any. Otherwise, I would call for the question at this time.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I'd like to move Committee of the Whole number 1 to House Bill 16 and ask for its favorable introduction. What happened is the various groups that deal in this kind of area all got together and decided on an amendment that establishes a referendum process. Should we ever, the state beef checkoff, ever want to increase this fee, there would need to be a referendum. And they decided that the beef checkoff program would petition the Department of Agriculture as an independent, neutral third party and ask for a referendum to be done. So what this basically does is allow the Department of Agriculture the rules and regs necessary to carry out provisions of the subsection that any time an increase in fees would be asked for, a referendum would be held of every cattle producer in Wyoming to see if there was broad intent to establish an increase in fees. And I'd be happy to answer any questions on that, should there be any.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am in support of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1. We had a great debate over this up in committee, filled up the big meeting room, and almost unanimously the testimony that came to us was there was a lot of people that testified that was opposing this measure, but I think there was a little more of a goodwill about the bill moving forward if we had the ability for the beef producers to be able to vote on this. So this Committee of the Whole Amendment does provide that opportunity for producers to vote on it. And we struggled in the committee to try to get this type of an amendment ready, and we weren't able to get it out where the members could be assured of exactly what we were trying to do. So I voted against this bill as it came out of committee because I wasn't willing to support it without a referendum option in it like we do have. So I would encourage the body to support this referendum because anytime we increase the fees on a self-assessment program, I just think it's appropriate that we allow the producers who are going to have to pay this an opportunity to weigh in on that decision and to vote. And this amendment provides, I think, a pretty good standard for a credible vote, and I would just encourage the body to support this amendment. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters? Representative Brosco.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to report from the ranchers on the western side of the state. I would urge you to support this amendment, but vote against the bill. I happen to agree with the good chairman of agriculture that ranchers in my district would like to have some say in this, but overall they fairly adamantly oppose this bill. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
I would just like to echo those remarks. That's the same feeling I'm getting from producers. The concern I have with the amendment, and I am supportive of the concept of the amendment, is are you going to allow anybody with a 4-H calf to have a vote, or are those of us that are actually producing thousands of head of cattle going to have a weighted vote? Because those of us that are actually paying the fee in a disproportionately large amount should have a larger voice at the table.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would also urge you to vote for this amendment but against the bill. And I think the previous speaker just brought up one of the problems. True, the people who are raising more cattle, on one hand, logic would say, well, they ought to have a bigger say in what happens. But on the other hand, you know, in my part of the state, there are livestock producers who own thousands of head of cattle who live in another state. And where's the fairness in that when you have a producing family, a family ranch that's passed down through many, many, many generations and may be only running 250, 300 head of cattle, as opposed to Mr. Moneybags from some other state with his thousands who can absolutely wipe out your representation. So these are tough questions, and I really think we have the cart before the horse here. If you believe that there is support in the cattle industry, and I can tell you that from the emails and the phone calls that I have received, there is no unity amongst the industry. If you believe you have that support, you should do the referendum first and then come and see about possibly raising the checkoff. Thank you.
Representative Wanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And we did have a very lengthy discussion in committee on how to have a fair referendum, if it was based on the number of cows or based on the number of producers, and how to exclude the people who have won 4-H or FFA livestock. And so we did, in the amendment here before you, leave it up to the Wyoming Department of Agriculture. They do understand the concerns on both sides of the issue, and we believe that they were a neutral third party that could go through and make the adequate rules and regs to have a fair referendum. I do know that I've got the same emails the rest of you have, and it does seem like there is a vocal majority of producers who seem to be against this, but I would remind the body from time to time we do get a passionate vocal minority of people, and the fair way is to have a referendum in the state between the producers to see if the majority of producers do want this. I think we heard a lot of testimony that this is working great, and if we are not sure we're going to take the step, I think there were a lot of concerns right now that maybe this isn't the best time to take the step, but putting in a law now to allow someday in the future, should they ever want to try a referendum to allow for it, is a good idea.
Any other discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill. Chairman Semlick.
Mr. Chairman, there's another Committee of the Whole Amendment, Number 2, to House Bill 6. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 16, ask for your favorable consideration. This is just a technical correction in the bill on page 2, line 19. After the word account, we're adding a period and we're striking the rest of that section. The reference in this section C let me just go back and read part of that. It says the amount reimbursed, this is a reimbursement of 5% of the fees that are collected back to the livestock board. And it says the fees collected during the month shall be deposited with the state treasurer to the credit of the board's inspection account created by Section A of this section. You go up into Section A, the account that's created up there is the Beef Council account and not the board account. So it's important that we change that, but it doesn't significantly affect the major tenets of the bill. So I just ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Question having been called, all those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. The amendment is adopted. We are back on the bill. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, as a business owner, kind of put my two cents in. I am on and against the bill. I think trade organizations and things to promote an activity are great. Through my business as a motorcycle dealer, I belong to several of them, but it's my choice to belong to them. It's my choice to choose if I want to participate or not. If cattlemen want to get together and form an association, I don't have any doubts it could be very successful and very useful, but it should be their choice. It shouldn't be mandated by the government. Thank you.
Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to sound redundant, but I did prepare some rather heartfelt remarks, so I'll go ahead and deliver them. Agriculture, as we all know, is a very important economic sector in this state, and in particular, ranchers and cattlemen are an essential backbone of that essential sector. And if we need any proof of that, we need look no further than the mural over in the right-hand corner. And it's not an easy life, and it never has been. And in some ways, it's getting harder because while the end product, steaks, whatever you go buy at the grocery store, while the prices of those products go up, by and large, comparably, the commodity price of livestock remains relatively the same, if not going down. So this is why we have these organizations, to help promote our product. But that said, Bill number 16, at least as it was originally written, is blatantly taxation without representation, because that is essentially what this would be. And so this was an effort to bypass the wishes of the vast majority of the producers of cattle in this state. And so this amendment is quite essential and needs to be in there and should have been included in the first place. So please vote against this. Thank you.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for the bill is not a mandate by the legislature to tax. The bill is just presents the opportunity for beef producers to allow themselves to impose a tax on themselves. And the amendment then is a vote by the producers. The majority wins. Now, it isn't going to represent everybody. Nobody knows ranchers better than I do. We have many opinions. As far as overwhelming one way or another, it's kind of hard to tell. There are three major ag organizations that support this beef checkoff, and they're member driven. And I kind of trust them. I got a lot of emails both ways. Some very dear friends and dear people that are opposed to it, too. But the organizations that I probably trust the most supported it. So, again, remember, we're simply giving them permission to tax themselves. We're not mandating the tax. Thank you.
Representative Blake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and for this bill, with the amendment, with the referendum, I think that'll help a lot of people out, give them a voice. And I want to remind everybody, it's not a government mandate. Thank you.
Madam Chair Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to know what the, I guess maybe some of the testimony that the committee heard. I know this was an interim topic this summer, but for a group of individuals who pride themselves so much on their independence, I'm really having a hard time in my mind answering the question, why would this language even be necessary to put into statute? Why is this not something that they can't accomplish themselves outside of the purview of state government? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman, I'll try to answer that last question first and go back to the bill. This is a useful program. I mean, the $1 originally in 1971 was set up to help the state. The feds came in. It's now a federal mandate that we have a dollar per chain of ownership on every cow and calf in the state. So regardless of this bill passes or fails, that federal $1 for the National Beef Checkoff is going to stay in place. 50 cents will go back to the state. 50 cents will be used at the national level. What we're trying to do is get back to the original intent to help Wyomingites with their own cattle industry, that the money would stay here in the state. Why is it in law? To answer the let me try to go back here. The money in Wyoming that this program was originally set to do and still does in the 50 cents goes to really important programs, one that presents agriculture in schools across the state, one that helps women in the cattle industry have groups, and you've seen lots of signs around the state that each county has a cattlewoman's group, and that's appropriate to say. The producers are wanting this money. If they ever take this stuff, and if we pass this bill, they're never mandated to take it, and they would have to have a referendum. the program's been working really well. We have three people that are appointed by the governor on this board that come from this industry that have paid into this program, that understand the workings and hopefully understand the cattle industry well enough to know if the will and the desire of producers around the state is there. So we're not, you know, mandating any tax with this. We're allowing a self-help program to go through on a commodity checkoff that every state in the country has, and Wyoming has multiple commodity checkoffs. All we're asking with this bill is to allow the flexibility based on a referendum should the cattle people of the state ever want to impose an additional up to a dollar, it can be 10 cents, it can be 20 cents, to help stimulate their own industry where the money stays in Wyoming and goes to tourism and goes to agricultural programming to allow them the option to do this. And so I don't think it's fair to say we're imposing a tax or we're imposing a mandate. We're allowing the flexibility for an industry to come and self-promote and help themselves, which is a statutory program and why we need to put it in statute. There is a possibility now that if you wanted to pay into these beef checkoff programs, you can go ahead and pay money into them at your own will, as much money as you want, but there is a $1 per change of ownership mandate. So I hope I answered that question okay in the end.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I understand the program, and I understand it's a self-funded education program, and it's been in place for many, many, many years. But I'm not hearing from the producers up in my area, and as we have already heard from other areas representing the producers, are saying no. I don't understand why we're even bringing this program. So I guess unless I hear a lot from my producers that says we want to increase our funding or change this according to what's in the bill, I can't see you voting for it. So I would have to say no.
Madam Chair Korber, or I'm sorry, Madam Chair Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, although I think I'm complimented by that. My emails are coming almost 100%, please vote no for this. And these are people in my district, these are people in my area, these are people in your areas as well. And I just have to listen to the people on this one. They're small producers, they're large producers, and they don't want this, and they view it as a tax.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It is a tax, and it's a self-imposed tax. That's the way the bill reads. It's already in place. A dollar's already collected. The difficulty that the cattle industry has, and this bill will address the ability of each individual producer to vote on that tax. The difficulty in the cattle industry that you don't have in some of the others is there's considerably more cattle in Wyoming than there are people. So we've got to find markets for them. The beef checkoff people work at that. So in answer to the some of the questions as to why it exists, that's kind of what they do. Part of the testimony that we heard was maybe $150 per animal on a carcass basis is due to an export market that the beef checkoff people have been working at. They take credit for that. I can't say for sure that it's all there. Some of it's just supply and demand driven. It's hard to figure all of those things out, but if we do pass it, we allow the producers to make up their own mind. They get to choose. We don't mandate the tax on them.
Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unfortunately, I know way too much about this, and I'm going to try and keep it brief. There is not industry-wide support for this. There is not. There is a few producers out there who belong to certain organizations who are really, really trying hard to promote this. If the individual producers wanted it, it would come from the grassroots up. We would be seeing emails saying, help us with this. But we're not. We're seeing emails from groups. It's coming from the top down. As one of the other good speakers said, this is a tax. Right now, we pay a dollar a head every time we sell a calf, a cow, or anything. I'm telling you, if we give them the ability, they're not, if we give them the ability to do this, when have you ever heard of a government organization having the authority to do it and then they don't do it? If they can raise it a dollar, they're going to. So then we're going to be paying $2 a head. We've had a lot of discussions about there needs to be an opt-out or there needs to be a refund provision. None of that is in here. And they keep saying, well, this is allowing us to promote Wyoming beef. What is Wyoming beef? There's no such thing. We are cattle producers in the state. There is no such thing as Wyoming beef. You go to the grocery store, you can get certified Angus beef. You can get red Angus beef. You can get Kobe beef. But when have you ever known you're buying Wyoming beef? It's only when you take your individual steer down to Roy's cold storage and you get it slaughtered yourself. There's no differentiation. So we are going to be paying an extra dollar on every head, and we are going to be getting nothing for it. Has the program been successful in the past? It's been a good program. But unfortunately, they've just discovered some huge corruption at the national level. They're in the middle of a big audit. Right now, we just found out that the CEO of this program is making over $450,000. That's a lot of dollars. So you tell me this is a good thing. I just can't understand why we won't let the producers decide this, and if the producers want it, then we can implement this change. The Beef Council that decides to do this is not an elected body. They have no accountability. They're appointed. We can promote our own industry. If there are a few people out there that want to do this, they can donate $100,000 right now to the program. They can donate as much as they want. But don't force the rest of us that are trying to keep our costs low, and our margins are so thin, we've got to keep our costs low to make it in the industry. They keep saying this bill allows us to. It allows us to. It does not. It forces us to. So I urge your defeat of this bill. Thank you.
Chairman Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to answer the question of the good representative from the land of the Hot Springs, why we have to put this in statute. And be my interpretation of that, because the provisions in the national checkoff, as and also what is contemplated in this state referendum, is that we give the authorization of the livestock board to collect that money. So I'd assume that is why, you know, it's a statutory requirement that we do that, because we're authorizing this political subdivision of the state to collect money. Thank you.
Representative Eklund.
Just one quick thing. I know we're talking it to death, and I'm sorry, but I got around $800 a head for my calves. They were weaned and somewhere around 600 pounds, and it was a great price. $1 is the only advertisement I got. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Question having been called, all those in favor of House Bill 16, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the vote having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. Having failed, thank you. Having failed at standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
Aye.
Blickrey.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Burkhart.
No.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Childers.
No.
Connolly. Connolly.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison. Davison. Davison excused. Davison excused. Edmonds.
No.
Eklund. Esquivel. Freeman.
No.
Gay.
Aye.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles excused. Greer.
No.
Green.
Aye.
Harshman. Harshman. Harshman excused. Harvey.
No.
Hunt.
No.
Illaway.
No.
Yagi.
No.
Kasparik.
No.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Laux.
No.
Lubno.
No.
Madden.
No.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Nicholas.
No.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen. Peterson.
No.
Petroff.
No.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters.
No.
Throne.
No.
Vronish.
No.
Wallace.
No.
Zwanitzer Dan. Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 8 ayes, 49 noes, 3 excused.
Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, House Bill 16, having failed a roll call vote, is indefinitely postponed. The next bill for our consideration is Bill 122. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 122, introduced by Representative Korberg. An act relating to crimes and offenses, no duty to retreat. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended a due pass with amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Peasley. No, Nicholas Throne. Absent, Crone. Sign, Representing Brown, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 122 do pass, and I further move Standing Committee Amendment number 1 and to explain both the bill and the amendment. I would turn it over to the sponsor.
Madam Chair Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, first of all, I'd like to deal with the Standing Committee Amendment. We did hear testimony on this piece of legislation. Well, the Standing Committee Amendment, let's work it first. On page 13, after the word is, the Standing Committee Amendment deletes the rest of the line. Page 14, it deletes the rest of the sentence up through the word attacked. So the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment would read, a person who is in a place where he has a right to be has no duty to retreat. That's the way that amendment fits into this piece of legislation. We did hear testimony from several of our good friends up in County Number 1 who deal in this in the self-defense common law and case law, and they indicated that this part of this piece of legislation would actually inadvertently had unintended consequences of narrowing the case law and common law that was on the statutes already for self-defense. So with that being said, I recommended to the Judiciary Committee that we delete that language. It did pass as a standing committee. And if there are no questions about that, I would like to call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
We are on Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 122. Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
Thank you.
Amendment is adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Or, excuse me, Mr. Majority Whip. I know the hour is late. I generally, when I bring these bills for your consideration on the floor, many of you know me, that I'm a huge proponent of our individual rights, not only in this country, but particularly in the state of Wyoming. It has been an area that I have been committed to since I became a legislator 7 years ago. I'm also a huge proponent of placing into statute, of being proactive, measures that I think are significant to the people of the state of Wyoming in helping them to understand what their rights are and what they can and cannot do. So therefore, I bring this bill to you today, which is basically a piece of legislation that says, if you are in a place where you have a right to be, you have no duty to retreat, and you have the right to stand your ground and meet force with force. It's a very short bill. It's a very easy bill to understand. And it goes on to say that includes deadly force. If you reasonably believe that it's necessary to prevent your death or serious bodily injury to yourself or another, or to prevent the commission of a violent felony. This is often a bill called No Duty to Retreat. You'll often hear it referred to as Stand Your Ground. It does not mean that you have to stand your ground. Understand that. What it does is it gives you the option. If your forced instinct is that you can retreat safely and avoid the confrontation, that's your call. If your instinct tells you, this is not what I want to do at this particular time, this bill says you do not have to retreat. You can stand your ground. If you're the mother on the street with a child on either hand, and you're confronted with a situation of give me your purse or else, and she knows there's an empty sidewalk and street behind her, she can certainly tell her children, you run, I will stand my ground. But you go to safety, and I can stand my ground. And I think it's important that we as legislators be proactive. I understand there was testimony, a lot of testimony, not only this year, not quite as much, but 2 years ago when this bill came before you, that we have substantial case law that reaffirms this position. We have common law that reaffirms this position. But I feel that as a legislative body, it is time for us to be proactive and not only reaffirm what is in case law and common law, but place it into statute. Law-abiding citizens go to the statutes to look for guidance, to look for what they can and cannot do. And that, my friends of the 61st, is the essence of this piece of legislation. And I'm going to stand for any questions on this at this time.
Is there any other discussion? Ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Brown's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with recommendation that House Bill 122 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. House Bill 122 has passed the Committee of the Whole.
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 49. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 49, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to public health primary care support program.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Vice Chairman Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 49 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, which is a substitute bill. I move the standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill 49, and if no member has any questions on the amendment, I would call for the question at this time in order that we may discuss the substitute bill in lieu of the original bill.
Question having been called, all those in favor of adopting standing committee amendment number 1, substitute bill number 1, for House Bill 49, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Amendment, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Bill 49 is adopted. We are back on the bill. Madam Chair Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to substitute Bill Number 1 of 49. And ladies and gentlemen, I'll explain what we did here. We changed, you won't be surprised by this, we changed the amount of appropriation. So we have reduced, if you were to look on your bill, page 3, line 5, we've reduced that page 5, line 1, to $3 million. And originally that had been at $10 million, so it's been reduced there. And then also in line with that, we changed the amount for administration, which is on page 5, line 14, which was at $200,000, and we reduced that down to $110,000. And if there aren't any further questions, in order to move along the bill discussion, I'd ask for a favorable aye.
Question having been called on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to substitute Bill Number 1, House Bill 49, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 49 is adopted. We are back on the bill. Madam Chair Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is just a simple little bill. It was so simple we amended it and now you have a substitute bill in front of you. Wyoming is an aging state. Wyoming has medical health care shortages, and that's what this bill is about. Community health centers and rural health clinics and enabling them to expand, enabling to build more. Of course, $10 million would have built a whole lot more than two, but we'll get started. Right now in the state, there are three main community health centers, one that has a satellite, and then there are two that serve migrant workers. But there are 40 communities in our state that are medically underserved. And how are we going to do this? So there are three communities that are in the hopper, three that want to start. As you can tell from the bill, if you go to page 3, lines 4 and 5, there's grants up to or shall not exceed $1 million, and that's state funds. There also is the federal funding that is available at this time now as well, and that's based on population. So if you're from a high concentration population area, you can get a startup cost from the federal government for $500,000. If you're from a medium population area, you can get $300,000. And if you're from a low population area, you can get $200,000 of federal money for startup. And as you can tell, $200,000 is not going to be a tremendous amount of money. Now, I'd like to explain the difference between a community health center and a rural health clinic, because there is a difference. The community health center, and both of these are federally funded, or federally subsidized, I should say. There is a competitive federal grant process for partial federal funding for the health center. There is not for the rural health clinic. Although both of these do offer free medical care as well as sliding fee scales, and they both accept people with that are private pay and also with health insurance. A community health center provides federal malpractice coverage. A rural health clinic does not. A rural health clinic excuse me, the Community Health Center is a nonprofit organization, and it's run by a board. Now, possibly a rural health clinic can be, but most generally they're associated with a hospital that is a critical access hospital, and the rural health clinics don't have to be associated with, but they already have their own boards. They do, we talked about sliding fee scales. The health centers offer dental and or behavioral health services on site or through contractual agreements. The rural health clinics do not. Both of them have to do federal data collection and reporting requirements, limited to the number of patients seen, patients' income, most prevalent medical conditions, and the cost per visit, et cetera. They're both governed by a board, the difference being that the Community Health Center has its own board, and then both of them do bill patients who have the ability to pay. They both do bill these. So, folks, this really is a bill about filling a need in the state and giving an ability to provide care for underserved areas. I'm not sure at this late hour you want me to go through this page by page, but I sure would if you'd like me to. I would like to tell you that the appropriation did go down to $3 million, and that will get the three that are in the hopper up and going. Or we could give a little bit less than $1 million. However, if you think of the cost of building a building and buying equipment and recruiting physicians, you know, it does limit the ability to build a whole bunch of these. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would just stand for questions.
Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do have one question. And as I understand it, the bill's purpose is really to be a one-time grant program to sort of spur capacity. But in looking under on page 2, lines 22 and 23, that section I, there's a number of things that the grants can be made for, you know, startup costs and those sorts of things. But the one that caused me a little bit concerned, I wanted to see if there was any discussion in the committee about it, was that for existing centers and clinics, grants can be made to expand the population served. And, I mean, what comes to mind is, are we setting up then, if this is a one-time grant, you're looking for expanding the population served, are you setting up a scenario where the centers are going to have to come back to us for additional ongoing funding or failure, and is that specific provision setting them up for failure, or were there more specific needs associated with expanding the population served that were discussed in committee?
Madam Chair Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that question. That was a very good question, and it's one of the areas I probably should have covered. If you go to page 2, starting on line 20, grants can be made for community health centers, rural health clinics, one-time startup costs of a new clinic or center, or for existing centers or clinics to expand population served. So that gives them the opportunity to add exam rooms. That would be one of the things that they could do. Recruit a doctor. And then there again, it may not be ongoing costs. It may be just finding a doctor and moving them to the area. So that could be one of those ability to expand the population served. You could expand services provided. If your clinic doesn't have dental, and these, excuse me, if the center, the rural, excuse, the community health centers, if they do not have dental now, that would be one of the services that they could offer. If they do not have mental health now, it could be one of the new services offered. So it just gives them the chance to offer that. And then the last thing, facilitate compliance with quality criteria. And so perhaps they've had some things that have been identified Perhaps you've got four or five healthcare providers in one office space that are all talking to patients on the telephone, and is that in compliance with HIPAA? And so do they need to have dividers between their desks? Do they need to have more office space? So those are the kind of things that these grants are talking about. So are we setting ourselves up for ongoing? Well, the federal government subsidizes both of these, and they do offer ongoing financial assistance. But there has to be community buy-in. In fact, there has to be, if the grant is $1 million, the community buy-in has to be no matter the amount of the grant, it has to be 25%. So it has to be 125 of community buy-in, and it can be in kind or cash. The community has to want this to happen. They have to develop a board. They have to raise some funds. There has to be community buy-in, and they have to, in their plan to the federal government, have to prove that they can sustain what they start.
Madam Chair Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I guess I have a couple of questions. I'm kind of worried about page 3, subsection, or Romanet 4, that if you do accept the money, you have to provide services regardless of the ability to pay. So I'm kind of concerned as to how they're going to be able to even break even, and how that's going to affect what they're able to do and continue to do once they've started this up in their community. And then my other question was, I wanted to know if this program is going to dovetail with the Affordable Care Act that has just come out of, or that was just passed by our colleagues, I guess, back in the motherland. So I just want to know how this fits in with that program, if this was on the table before that program was passed. Will this fit in, or will it be a program we're going to have to start and then perhaps not follow through with, or won't be federal funding to continue it? I'd like some dialogue on that. Thank you.
Madam Chair Harvey.
Thank you. Very good questions. On page 3, lines 12 through 14, that you have to provide services to the public regardless of ability to pay. These are federally subsidized programs. Medicaid patients do get to come to these. I will tell you that these are programs. There are some of them. In fact, one in the center of the state is just getting ready to celebrate its 10th anniversary. There's one in this city. So this is not a new program. I think that should the Federal Care Act, the Affordable Care Act, go into effect, that it may get us the ability so that as more people get insured, it gives us the ability to actually serve them instead of just the illusion that they have coverage, but in fact there's nobody to go see because we are medically underserved.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I stand in support of this bill. This is something we've been working on for as long as I've been here, and I see this as a great opportunity to get some accessibility and affordability of health care in our smaller communities. And of course, this program has been around with a substantial federal component for as long as I can remember. But again, I hesitated whether or not to say something that the previous Madam Chair mentioned, but it is my understanding that there has been some renewed funding for this program through the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. And of course, as we start discussing and debating health care in earnest and to try and figure out how one health care bill in front of us interacts with the next one we talk about, I think it's important for all of us to understand probably maybe a lack of a coordinated approach to the healthcare issues in front of us, and bear in mind that taking a positive affirmative action on this may not interact well with a vote on a future healthcare legislation. So, again, a question. I would like our good Madam Chair of Labor Health to tell us, yay or nay, in affirmative or negative, if there are dollars tied to the healthcare reform bill out of Washington for this program.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you very much. I'd just like to tell you a little bit about one of the communities that the good chair of Labor Health mentioned when she told you there were three communities that were kind of in the hopper and waiting to start up. This particular community has had a federal loan application going for the last 18 months. There's been huge community buy-in, not only monetarily, but through support of a board of directors, an executive director. They have a building. They just don't have the startup costs. And in this particular county, there is not even one primary care provider or one dentist that will do a sliding fee scale or will accept Medicaid reimbursement. So we've got a community that's really crying for services. State mandates that if a child enters foster care, they have to have a medical or dental evaluation within 48 hours. It pains me to tell you that some kids in this particular community have waited a year for that. The need is great. As I mentioned, the office is there. It's open. They just can't accept patients yet because they still need the equipment, the supplies that being able to access some of this funding would allow them. And I was told that every day they get an average of 17 phone calls from people wanting health care that have at this point in time no access to it. It's a program that's badly needed in our state. It's a program that, in my experience, has huge community buy-in, and I think is really for the good of our people of Wyoming. Thank you very much.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I may have missed some of these things, so if I may, I'll just kind of reference it, and I know it's getting late. I think there was a reference to a community health center in the center of the state, and I'm some familiar with that. Is this an effort to replicate, in part, that kind of a facility in other communities with the funding that's within the bill? And there's no fiscal note on this, and I'm a little confused between what are the federal dollars and what are the state dollars going forward. And those are just two kind of specific questions that would sure help me understand it better.
Madam Chair Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There is a fiscal note on the bill. If the good chairman has his substitute bill, then the fiscal note is... wrong page. There are two appropriations. One is $110,000 to the Department of Health for the operation of this, and the other one is $3 million to give grants. And yes, it is to replicate the one in the center of the state that's ready to celebrate their 10th anniversary, is to build more similar to that. And I'll tell you that even that community that is celebrating their 10th anniversary still is an underserved area. And during testimony we did hear about a gentleman who has a small business in that community who has moved his business to a state north of us because his family couldn't get primary care. And so, I mean, it's just one example of the primary care. And if I could answer to my good colleague from House District 47, his question was, is this tied to ACA? There was some more money put in the ACA Act to support these. It is not a new federal program. There was more money put in. It's just a simple renewal. It just made more money available to people who have the community buy-in, who have the interest and the desire. And I did read the amounts that were available from that federal grant based on population. All of those are based on population. And yes, there are federal grants available. And yes, it ties into ACA in the fact that it was renewed through that and more dollars were made available.
Madam Chair Korber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and I guess that whole last discussion and earlier just prompts me to ask an additional question. This is clearly, we have some of these centers already established around the state. They are accessing federal money. So now my concern is, this is, in fact, a new program for the state of Wyoming to get involved in. This is a brand new section, unless I'm mistaken, and this has been pulled over from another part of state statute and moved over here. But my concern now is, by the state becoming involved, do we stand the risk of going down the same road that we've gone down with Medicaid, where we've now got state dollars involved and the federal government just starts pulling away and pulling away, and this is going to start a major input of state dollars in order to maintain our share of this program. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Madam Representative Croker.
Just a quick thought. This is not a budget year, and to me, spending over $3 million is a lot of money, especially with all the questions that are raised that we're going to have to comply with the ACA. It seems to me if this is a good idea, it will still be a good idea next year in a budget session, and I would suggest it might be more appropriate to put it off and bring it up then.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will suggest to you that if we put this off for another year, those three centers that are ready to open will not be there. That communities have already spent a great deal of money. There's a great deal of personal money put into this just in terms of a good faith commitment with the state. They can't wait 12 more months. They're barely managing to scrimp along waiting to open these centers. I would be very saddened to see these particular centers that are all ready to open. All they need is this additional funding for startup costs, and they won't be here. They won't be here in another year, and there will be that many more unserved residents of Wyoming. Thank you.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't believe it is a new program in the state. As I'm aware, over in the county by the same name with the exciting new oil play in Wyoming, that there's a clinic that is participating with funds from that is up and running and utilizing funds from this program. I like this idea of community health centers. There are, as has been said, many medically underserved areas in this state. There are persistent low-income populations in those medically underserved areas. This is a way where we can match the two of them together with the help of some federal dollars and some state dollars. I did have a question because I think it plays and it helps to describe some of the advantage of this program. The question for the good chairman is, isn't there available through the community health centers an enhanced reimbursement rate for Medicaid and Medicare through Medicare and Medicare that would help to pay the providers and the physicians taking part? That's a question for the chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't disagree with the previous speaker. I like the idea of the programs. I think they've worked well. What I don't like is this bill, because it is expanding. We are now going from the private buy-in to the state coming in and saying we're going to do matching grants, because the feds have put more money into the ACA Act. And one has to ask yourself, why in that whole act, and there was a vision in that act, there's a whole vision of what they want to do with healthcare across this nation in that act. So why in that act did they put more money into these federally qualified health clinics? In my mind, and from what I understand about it, it's because they want to drive more people into you and I, into federally qualified health clinics, because we are trying to get down the road to single-payer, government-run health care. That's why the feds put more money into this program in the ACA. So then we in Wyoming have to step back and ask ourselves, why do we want to now hurry up and start building more of these clinics? Have we made this policy decision on this floor? Have we really thought about what all these health care bills, and I have a list of them on a spreadsheet if anybody would like some, it's at my desk. What are all these bills saying and doing? And where are we headed? That's what really concerns me about this, that we have not had a comprehensive vision of what all this is going to do. I would like some explanation about why is the state now coming in, other than the feds have put more money into the ACA for this. So we're rushing to grab some of that money to build more of these programs. And then the other point about community buy-in, that we need community buy-in. I asked some questions about some of the ones we have around the state, and what I heard was that a few of them are really struggling. And so are we asking the state now to come in and rescue them? That's a never-ending scenario for us, and it would be exceedingly expensive. So I don't have any problem with them standing alone the way they have been doing and surviving the way they have been doing when the community agrees with it and when there's community tie-in. But that's not what this is. This is the state now coming in. And as the good chairman said, the state coming in a new program, a new section in law, and saying we're going to come and help these things out. So you have to ask yourself, why did the feds put more money into ACA as part of the holistic picture? Let's think holistically about this, and why are we rushing to do this? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not one to trust the federal government or to urge you all to trust the federal government, but there was an oil filter commercial on television a few years ago that said, you can pay me now or you can pay me later, but you're going to pay me, and it just depends on how much. We will, as a state, end up bearing the burden of this health care because it's an obligation we have to our citizens. And this vehicle, while I don't like it, is a function of economic reality. We have to recruit physicians to this state, primary care physicians to this state. And the economic realities are that physicians go where their quality of life is best. And so we're competing with people who can go into physician groups in large areas and have one in 14 call or one in 5 call. Or you can go to a smaller rural community and have call 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And because of the immunity that the federal government provides, these vehicles become more attractive to physicians. And so the economic reality is that if you want to recruit physicians, this is one of the things that people look at. It's one of the top 5 things that people look at when you're a physician is what state has immunity, how can I get immunity? Well, in Wyoming, there's 2 ways you can do it. You can go to work for the federal government, or you can go to work for a governmental entity. And those are the only ways that you have to protect your personal assets. Now, I've brought bills in the past to this body to expand that protection to people who contract with the federal government. We've seen fit not to do that. But the reality of the world is if you want to bring physicians to this state, you can pay the higher premium to get them here, or you can use a vehicle like this.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's
See, we are coming to that fork in the road, and we have to just decide which direction we're going to go. And it is true to follow up on the majority floor leader's comments that, you know, with the lack of tort reform in the state of Wyoming and the difficulty in recruiting physicians to the state of Wyoming has given us pretty much this only choice. I am concerned about when we did cut the funding down to $3 million because of the three communities that are looking to start one of these centers, that for those of you that represent some of the smaller communities where the access to health care is a big issue, that there may not be funds available within this legislative session for your communities to start a community health care center or rural health clinic. But I do have the list of those communities or those counties, and pretty much you can rule out the one in the center of the state. They're sitting pretty good. You can rule out this county. We're sitting pretty good. But about every other county from north here all the way to the Montana border and straight across along there to the big national park and all the way back on down the west side of this state and just about all the way back here to this county line, all those small towns in there could be left out in the cold. And I really considered bringing a committee of the whole amendment to increase that to $5 million. But just to give some of you representatives that do represent some of those smaller communities the opportunity. And, you know, for those of you that aren't real big fans of ACA, you should be a big fan of this, because this is something that's more of providing health care the Wyoming way, not the federal way. Although it's hard to say you don't want to accept those federal dollars, because, yeah, they're tied. You know, they're tied to things like Medicaid, serving the undeserved, and by having those doctors not be under the Federal Tort Claims Act. And, you know, like I said at the beginning, do we want to enact tort reform in the state of Wyoming, or do we want to go with community health centers that are federally funded? So if any of you are interested in coming back in the second reading, that you want to have a community health center in your community, and you want to bring a budget amendment to add a couple million dollars more to it, I'll be glad to sign on it with you.
Madam Chair Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To answer the question from my colleague from House District 25, yes, there is an enhanced Medicaid rate for community health centers and rural community clinics, and that's to help them cover the cost of the care of indigent, and that means people who do not apply for Medicaid or people who do not qualify and still are unable to pay their bills. They do serve people on a sliding fee scale. They do serve people that are in this body, that attend, that go to these clinics. These clinics are utilized all over. I'd like to answer the question from my colleague from House District 12. Is this headed toward a single-payer system? Yeah, I can't guarantee it won't. But I can tell you this, we don't have enough doctors in Wyoming. We have increased our seats in the WAMI Medical School. We help doctors who come to this state to pay back their student loans. We have put money into accounts to recruit doctors. And yet still, we are medically underserved. We are medically underserved. There are people. And to give you an example in my area, a music teacher depends on hearing, goes in, tries to make an appointment because she's got an earache, can't get an appointment for 4 days. winds up going to the ER on the weekend with a burst eardrum and lost her hearing. We are medically underserved, and what are we going to do? What more can we do? We have more seats per capita in WAMI than any other state involved in it. We just passed a bill out to help with the WICHE program. We do everything we can to increase medical providers in Wyoming. So what else can we do? This is one of the ways. Are we rushing into this? Well, how about let's just say we're taking advantage of money that's being provided for us. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I call for the question on this bill.
Question being called. All those in favor of Madam Chair Harvey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a recommendation that Bill number 49 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 49 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no.
No.
The motion carries, and the chair thanks you for your vote.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. House Bill 121, amended, recommended, do pass. House Bill 120, amended and further amended, recommended, do pass. Representative Lubno moved that the Committee of the Whole rise and sit again, and the motion prevailed. House Bill 127, amended and further amended, recommended, do pass. House Bill 16, amended and further amended and further amended. Following a failed roll call vote, the bill is deemed indefinitely postponed. House Bill 122, amended, recommended, do pass. House Bill 49, amended and further amended, recommended, do pass. Signed, Representative Burkhart, Chairman.
Representative Burkhart.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Congratulations. We're at that order of business, messages from the Senate.
Message number 158. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 9, Economic Analysis. Ayes 28, noes 2, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 159, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 22, Wind Energy Property Rights. Ayes 30, noes 0, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 160, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 33, State Parks Acquisition of Lands. Ayes 28, noes 2. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 161. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 37, Health Insurance Definitions. Ayes 29, noes 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 162, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 68, Summary Probate Amendments. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 163. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 100, Cruelty to Animals. Ayes 19, noes 11. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Mr. Speaker, message number 164. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 116, Oil and Gas Enhanced Recovery Microbial Conversion. Ayes 29, noes 1. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 165. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate Joint Resolution 5, Defense of Marriage Constitutional Amendment. Ayes 20, noes 10. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 166. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 88, Expungement of Nonviolent Felonies. Ayes 30, no 0. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom was referred House Bill 92, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Throne. No, Brechtel, Peasley. Excused, Barbuto. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 107, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 123, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 140, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. No, Brechtel. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 141, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Nicholas, Throne. No, Brechtel, Crone, Peasley. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 160, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbuto, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Bill 167, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Crone, Nicholas, Peasley, Throne. No, Barbuto, Green. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number one, Judiciary, to whom is referred House Joint Resolution number 3, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Brown, Kennedy, Green, Crone, Peasley. No, Barbuto, Nicholas, Throne. Signed, Representative Brown, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 34, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do not pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 39, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Escobel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 66, respectfully report same back to the House with that recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Esquivel, Harshman, Pedersen, Stewart, Wallace. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 129, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Edmonds, Esquivel, Harshman, Pedersen, Wallace. No, Stewart. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number four, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 85, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number four, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 155, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Freeman, Croker, Crone, Laux, Madden, Teeters. Signed, Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred House Bill 178, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Yagi, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson, Stubson. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number seven, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 188, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blickery, Byrd, Illaway, Croker, Patton, Roscoe, Shepperson. No, Yagi, Stubson. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 36, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred House Bill 99, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom was referred House Bill 162, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Barbudo, Kraft, Gay, Gingrey, Gingrey, Green, Harvey, Hunt, Miller, Peasley. Signed, Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Chairman Childers, Representative Childers. Re-referrals, Representative Teeters, Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move to re-refer House Bill 155 to your committee number two, Appropriations.
It's been moved for re-referral House Bill 155 to committee number two, Appropriations. Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Committee announcements. Chairman Childers.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number three, Revenue, will meet Friday morning, January 28th at 8 a.m., room H11, to consider House Bill 128, Ethanol Tax Credit, House Bill 147, Excise Tax, Vendor Compensation.
Chairman Brown.
Now to number two.
Mr. Chairman, House Judiciary number one will meet tomorrow morning, Friday, January 28th at 6:59 a.m. in room 302. To hear the following bills: House Bill 149, Marriage Definition; House Bill 150, Civil Unions.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 10, Labor, will meet Friday, January 28th, 15 minutes after noon recess, in room H17, to hear the following bills: House Bill 181, Wage Rate Penalties; House Bill 193, Nursing Care Facility Assessments.
Chairman Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, your committee number eight, Transportation and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes after adjournment today in room H17. We will hear House Bill 139, Wyoming Veterans Memorial Highway, and House Bill 177, Vietnam and Veterans Welcome Home and Thank You Day.
Vice Chairman McKim.
Well, thank you for the advancement, Mr. Chairman. But travel, your committee number six, travel, will meet Friday, January 28th at 8 a.m. in H10 to take up the following bill, House Bill 229, Penitentiary Working Environment.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number four, Education, will meet Friday upon noon recess in H10 for consideration of the following bills. House Bill 214, Hathaway Scholarship College Attendance. House Bill 219, Hathaway Scholarship Program Amendments. And House Bill 204, Patriotism in the Classroom.
Vice Chairman Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number nine on Minerals, Business and Economic Development will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in Room H18. And we will be covering HB 14, Internet-Based Vehicle Manufacturers and Sellers, HB 91, Torrington Prison Wind-Powered Electric Service, and House Bill 176, Nuclear Energy as Carbon-Free Renewable Energy.
Any other committee announcements? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You will notice on your list of general file bills that the font is getting smaller. You will also notice that I enjoyed the discussion on House Bill 49 so much that I put it up again third on the list tomorrow. General file bills for tomorrow, the first 10, House Bill 61, House Joint Resolution 6, House Bill 160, House Bill 182, House Bill 35, House Bill 152, House Bill 37, House Bill 154, House Bill 114, and the rest are contained on that list. That are passed out, Mr. Speaker. With that, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. Friday, January 28th, 2011.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The House is adjourned until Friday, January 28th, 2011, 10 a.m.